And that's a good thing, because we've been, because it's been low for such a long time. So it's more favorable right now than it has been. Okay, let me just let it drop. Okay, and thanks, Paul, for that. The D-layer exists only during the daytime. As soon as the sun goes down, the free electrons combine very rapidly with the gas ions to form neutral molecules. The E-layer also is primarily a daytime layer, though it lasts somewhat longer after sunset than the D-layer. And we all know that when the sun goes down, the conditions change rapidly. The actual E-layer disappears, and now you get a higher angle, and your signals are radiating more into space at a higher altitude because of the ionized layer decreases. So during the daytime, both the F1 and F2 layers exist at the same time as separate layers. However, after sunset, the F1 layer rises and combines with the F2 layer. Both layers occur at great heights where the number of gas molecules in the atmosphere is very small. They do not entirely disappear at night because the free electrons and ions cannot combine as rapidly as they do in the D and E layers. The F2 layer has a maximum density at noon and its minimum density shortly before sunrise. Immediately after the sun rises, the density of the F2 layer increases very rapidly. The F2 layer is the most important one in long-distance shortwave communication. Okay, so there is another layer. It says not shown in Figure 5, right, which occurs at irregular intervals, and this layer is called the sporadic E layer. It is characterized by a very high frequency, or you should say, it's characterized by very high free electron density. It does not occur as a complete layer, but in patches within the E layer region. This layer may occur either during the day or at night, and may last from a half an hour to several days. The electron density of the sporadic E is also, or I should say, the electron density of the sporadic E is so high that often very high frequency waves are bent back to the Earth by it. It is this layer that accounts for the television reception at distances of 500 to 1,000 miles. Since this layer does not always exist, it cannot be counted on for regular communications. Actually, its presence is more of a nuisance than a help, because it can cause interference between TV stations. So they show a little picture here of the different angles and how the ionized layers cause the bending of the waves back to the Earth. If a wave strikes the ionized layer almost at right angles, and as shown in this pictorial here, as shown for the high angle wave in this pictorial, it may pass through the ionized layer and hence will not be turned back towards the Earth. On the other hand, if the wave enters the ionized region at a smaller angle, it may be bent back towards the Earth without entering the layer to any great extent. At still smaller angles, the bending may be slower and the waves will travel for a longer distance within the layer. This results in greater absorption than for a wave that is bent more sharply, but causes the wave to return to the Earth farther from the transmitter. Okay, so it says we will learn about this phenomenon more shortly. Okay, so it's probably the next little chapters here. Anybody have any questions so far on all this of how these waves are propagated through space? It's a lot to absorb in one sitting. You have to sort of visualize it and, you know, get an idea of what's going on. Okay. I hope W2BZ is listening. I think Rich said he would be listening tonight. The higher the frequency, get my page here, the higher the frequency of the transmitted wave, the less it will be bent by the ionized layers. The higher frequency signals will go through the lower ionized layers of the ionosphere and will proceed up to the more dense F layers before they are bent back to the Earth. Thus, the high frequencies are used to send signals over long distances because they are bent by the higher atmospheric waves. At night, even the lower frequency waves travel great distances because they are reflected from the F layer rather than absorbed by the D and E layers. The VHF and UHF waves have such very high frequencies that they are able to penetrate the F layer and pass through it into outer space. Thus, VHF and UHF signals radiated upward generally serve no useful purpose. Under conditions of very high electron density, the VHF signals can be reflected by the ionized layers. This condition, however, is very rare. It occurs only in sporadic E patches or during very great sunspot activity. I show a picture of it, how you can get multiple hops under this condition. It's called a two-hop skip. So you're transmitting, it hops, hits the layer, the F layer, bounces back, hits the Earth, comes back to the Earth, bounces off the Earth, goes back up to the layer, and then comes back down again at a much greater distance. Often a transmitted signal will return to the Earth and be reflected again to the ionosphere to return to the Earth at some more distant point. And that's the figure I just described. This is referred to as a two-hop skip. Multiple-hop communication sometimes permits transmission over great distances at a low frequency. Okay, so it sort of completes this little dissertation of how the radio waves are bent and how they travel. The next chapter, which I'm going to hold off on, 9:15, it's a little bit earlier today, which is good, will be the study of the radios used to transmit information, and it's called the radio spectrum. And we will see how the ionosphere, the Earth's atmosphere, and the Earth itself influences the propagation. So the next chapter will be characteristics of the radio frequency. Concludes this little bit of how your radio and how the atmosphere and the ionosphere and how ways to propagate and bend back to the Earth or continue upward, and how the sun affects. W8 to CDL.
Thank you very much, Andy. That was an interesting episode of Andy's Corner. I the way that I'm kind of the atmosphere, it might help people, it might not. Wesley kind of mentioned that electromagnetic waves go in straight. You know, we live that every day with light, it goes in straight lines. But that, and ionosphere is just another example of substance with a different dielectric constant. Optical, you know, in optical versions of that are lenses. Everyone with prisms and lenses, and refraction can curve the course of light. around the ionosphere is a sort of a series of lenses and prisms that cause the electromagnetic waves of radio waves to bounce around. And some are good bounces and others are terrible bounces. So just keep that in mind. Yes, Wesley. Antennas. If you have an antenna that's not 50 ohms of impedance, you get an impedance mismatch and you get reflection. That electric current, putting material changes in the constant produce reflections, refractions, transparent absorption, and scatter. You know, that's people kind of feel better knowing that that light kind of visually shows you all those things. So I just thought it would work better if you thought in terms of all these things due to the ionosphere and RF waves.
Kind of lost. The dielectric constant of the plastic or the electric or insulating material can be defined as the ratio of charge stored in an insulating material placed between metallic plates. The charge then can be stored when insulating material is replaced by vacuum or air. How that relates to the refraction or reflection of the photon from ionosphere?
Well, because ionized gas does have its own inherent dielectric constant, based on different parameters of concentration and the frequency and such. So it's another dielectric material. So that's why I use that as an example.
As a broad term, I have a problem with that because the plasma frequency in ionosphere is about 1 megahertz. Like at the upper end wave band of radio frequencies. It allows the radio signals, signals in space band, and more in and computer direct, or maybe I don't understand.
I'm looking at this right now. It's a little bit of mass, and I'm trying to stay away from that. In the antenna handbook, which I have in front of me, edition, chapter 23, there's 38 pages of wave propagation, radio wave propagation, that actually goes into the you're asking along with the mass that why it occurs. So, as a suggestion, don't have it. See if you can look up this information because it'll explain to you. And I'm reading it, but again, it gets a little bit, which I'm trying to stay away from. It's in a particular chapter of radio wave propagation. 38 pages here, and it's pretty in depth. So, just as a suggestion to you.
We are getting it on the side of the original question, my original about the disagreement was regards but it is also in the system that there's no bending. Bending doesn't happen, it does the force doesn't have enough pure energy. It cannot be bent. It can reflect, it can refract, it can be ionosphere. So but it cannot bend. It can reflect. So you have a thing there that you
don't please, but I just want to mention that as mentioned refraction, it's sense purposes phase of light, but that's how mirrors that's how the prisms work, that's how mirrors, that's how lenses work. We use it every day. Prisms, all kinds of fun stuff. You can, if you have an aquarium and you put a straw in the aquarium, you'll notice that the straw looks like it's off to the kilter when it goes into the water. It's because the light is refracting through the interface. So please, John, say your piece.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment about ground wave. The idea that the wave sort of follows the curvature of the Earth as a ground wave is because at the surface, the electric field has to stay normal to the relatively conductive ground surface. So in doing that, causes the EM wave to sort of follow the curvature of the Earth. A ground wave does, to a certain extent, follow the curvature of the Earth. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, John. I was talking more of refraction, and light does bend, and radio waves are just low-frequency electromagnetic waves like light is. So you can bend it, and the ionosphere does bend it. It's a much more complicated thing than one thing. It's, as Andy mentioned, you have a D layer, which is mostly destructive. It kills transmissions on 180 and 160 and 80 meters during the daytime, as we all know and hate. There is a E layer, which way back was called the Kennelly-Heaviside layer, but almost everyone calls it the E layer. And you have the F layer that, if energized enough, can split into F1, F2. They all have different density of gases. They all have different density of charged particles, and they all have somewhat different dielectric constants. And every time you travel from one area with a dielectric constant of one thing to a dielectric constant of another thing, you get reflection, refraction, and all the other fun stuff. So it does bend. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Let me respond to that. Bending is the act of bending. That means something that changes shape, an action that changes the shape of something. And it includes curvature. Electromagnetic wave doesn't have a curvature. It reflects. So if it's the number of small reflections that makes that what looks like a bending, it has nothing to do with applied mechanics, bending, or the understanding of the word bending. If you look at the dictionary, you're going to find out what then bending is. And to issue.
In terms of wave propagation, bending means changing its path from straight to something that isn't straight.
But the changing of the path from straight to something that isn't straight doesn't go by curvature, by means of curvature. There is no curvature in the electromagnetic wave. It is a number of small micro reflections or refractions or whatever is happening there. There is no curvature. And to Asia.
Again, I disagree with you. It's due to the different dielectric constant of the two areas, the area that the wave is coming from, and the you know, the dielectric constants of the material that it's going through. You know, you can twist the curvature by changing the geometry of the lens, but you know, a straight piece of glass that's a quarter of an inch will have the same apparent distortion of its straight path, whether it's a quarter of an inch or 15 inches deep. That's just a factor of the optical density, which is another expression for a dielectric constant.
Mr. Roy, my first question, we're going far from the question, was in regards to the ground wave. The radio signal spreads out from the transmitter along the surface of the Earth. Instead of just traveling in a straight line, the radio signals tend to follow the curvature of the Earth. So, the term of bending, or the term of reflection and refraction, here, when we deal all the time at the same air, and the air is uniform in its nature, especially close to the Earth, for, let's say, for the next 1,000 kilometers, or whatever is the distance we take, we're not dealing with something like plasma or ionosphere. How then, gradually, the angle change? N2XGS.
AC2GS. Well, the problem, Wes, is that I'm answering the question that you asked me. You want the answer to be the answer to the question that you asked Andy 15 minutes earlier, which is a different question. And John addressed it, WA2VDH, and I think that was a reasonable answer. I'm trying to address the fact that refraction is a real thing. You know, Isaac Newton wrote a whole book, Optics, on partly on that subject, and so that it does disrupt the straight linear path of electromagnetic waves in the way of light. That's what refraction is. That's what optical densities mean, that's what dielectric constants mean. So I'm answering the question you asked me, as opposed to the one you asked Wes, you asked Andy a while ago.
Thank you very much for straightening it out. As far as the ground wave, it is very much shared opinion that because the currents are induced in the surface of the Earth, and the action slows down the wave front in this region, it is causing the wavefront of the radio communication signal to tilt downwards towards the Earth, which is completely impossible, because at first what currents, there was never specified what currents are affecting wavefront, what they're coming from. If you're talking about geomagnetically induced currents, GIT, affecting the normal operation of lung electrical conductor systems, it has nothing to do with photons and radio waves. So it's for me, it's completely baloney, or it's something that maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't find anything what made me to believe that I'm wrong. So by that, the theory, that it's not a theory, it's actually the explanation, scientific explanation of how the ground waves behave, and I explained to you in the emails, is to be applied. Not this this explanation that is widely available on the internet. Then to
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Well, the induced ground currents are from the time-varying magnetic field. If you have a conductive surface and you have a time-varying magnetic field, that's going to induce current. Okay. If the surface of the Earth were perfectly conducting, then what would happen? It would force the electromagnetic electric field to be normal at every point, and you would get the electromagnetic field following the surface, the curvature of the Earth. But the Earth isn't perfectly conducting, but you do have some ground-induced currents by the time-varying magnetic field. Go ahead.
Well, the problem that I have with it is photon doesn't have a mass. It cannot be tilted by electromagnetic field of the Earth.
Well, what exactly are we talking about when we're talking about a photon? I mean, the radio wave is an electromagnetic field. It has an E field and a magnetic field, an H field. Okay? The photon is not some rigid ball bearing. that we're spewing out of the antenna, okay? But we do have the EM field. It's near a conductive surface. So the way it's going to behave near that conductive surface is going to depend on how conductive that surface is and things like that.
Well, I absolutely disagree. Let me drop it. You're probably mixing some phenomena that appears to be in the near field and the far field and the Fresnel region. The thing is that once you take out your photon from the near field and it's in far field, you're losing control over it. And you can bend it, you cannot bend it, you cannot do anything with it. It's going straight. It may reflect, it may be consumed, but like a photon that is coming from the sun is hitting the air molecules and it's simply turning into the heat. But you cannot bend it. And you cannot affect it. So that current that you're talking about cannot affect the photon. And the electromagnetic wave in the far field is a photon, and to agree.
We are talking about far field. Yes, that's true. And we're only talking about far field. If you have an electromagnetic wave propagating over a conductive surface, it can affect it, okay? One of the things that happens at a highly conductive surface is that the electric field is forced to be normal to that surface. If it wasn't normal to that surface, that would cause a current flow, okay? Because of the electric field having a component parallel to that surface. So a highly conductive surface forces the electric field to be normal to it. And if that surface bends, you get a certain following of that wave with that surface. That's what causes ground wave propagation. It tends to follow the surface of the Earth. Go ahead.
I think that our wave diagram follows Maxwell's the boundary conditions. Solve the equation. You'll have the electromagnetic wave propagate down a wave diagram.
That's correct. That's what I was trying to say. See, you're mixing some phenomena that are happening in the waveguide or in the interface, which is a waveguide but it's two-dimensional, and that is related to the polarization and to the mode. So it's TA, transverse electric, or it's TM, transverse magnetic. That's what you're mixing. But when in the open air, when you have an air is not a high quality conductor, it's a lossy conductor. So it's a lossy conductor, right? So when you put your electromagnetic wave and it's in far field, you have no control, you cannot bend it, you cannot even affect it. It's just going straight away. And I would be happy if you prove me wrong, can't you see it?
Well, as mentioned, let me see if I have it. Yeah, as mentioned, for example, if you have a waveguide, I didn't want to use a waveguide as an example because that's not a TEM propagating mode, okay? But again, like an E-plane bend or an H-plane bend, where you have bends in waveguides, you propagate around it because of the beating the boundary conditions. But again, in free space, if you have a TEM wave over a conducting surface, and that surface bends, the wave will try to keep its electric field normal to that surface, and it will bend to a certain extent and follow that surface. And yes, with the ground, of course, because it's not perfectly conducting, you do get attenuation as the wave follows the surface of the Earth. But that's how you get a medium frequency propagation over some long distances. It's mostly ground wave, although you do get some sky wave also. Go ahead.
Well, I have a problem with what you said at first. Unguided electromagnetic waves in free space or in bulk isotropic dielectric can be described as superposition of plane waves. Those can be described as TEM, transverse electromagnetic modes, as defined below, but also transverse electromagnetic TEM and TM and TE are the normal modes for waveguide modes. So if you say, well, TM is not present in the waveguide, I have a problem with that. Then to a shift.
guy.
Exactly.
Is line of sight, how do you compare line of sight with ground wave?
Wow. Who was that that question to? If it was to me, I can recall handle it.
Go ahead, Wesley. KG2RY.
Okay. So we... Okay, bomb. So let me leave the transmission lines and function of wave in transmission line. The horizon that has a curvature of the Earth when you shift the wave from one point to the other, if I understood the question properly, it can carry on at the antenna that is 1 meter long, which is 3 feet, to the horizon, as that would be not a visible horizon, but that would be horizon from the 1 meter antenna elevation to 1 meter antenna elevation from the other side of the horizon. That would be radio horizon, and that would be a line of sight. Is it anything in your question that I skip or didn't understand?
No, that's fine. But, you know, when they're saying there's a curvature of the Earth and the signal travels along the curvature of the Earth to a certain extent, and I'm saying, what if, you know, the signal is going from point to point?
Yeah, that was actually what Dr. Roy, and I do respect Dr. Roy. He is a guy who doesn't want the discussion to go sideways or to the side. He also thinks that if we go deep into the waveguides or the interfaces, we're gonna be in the area where people are not interested too. But at the same time, you ask the question. So actually, what is happening is, in some waveguides, so I skipped the TEM right now explanation, which was questioned because you're right and you're wrong, but actually you're right. If the waveguide is able to handle the TEM. So I'm going to skip it and put it on the side and go to the ground wave.
Yeah, on the ground wave.
We have two factors. One is ground wave. We have two terms. One is a ground wave, and the other one is surface wave. So if we go to the surface wave is the wave that is going along the surface, whatever surface it is. It could be the surface of the Earth, and then we're dealing with the ground wave. There is a slight difference between ground waves and the surface waves, but let me concentrate on the surface waves. Earth as dielectric. Earth as dielectric is over the surface of the Earth, and the Earth is being considered a lossy conductor. So now, if we are able to shoot the wave at a certain angle that will not be refracted or reflected, and all energy will go to the interface between Earth and air, that Earth and air will create an interface, which is the waveguide, but it's flat, two-dimensional waveguide, to carry on that wave inside. And then this wave will go all around the world, Earth, and come back to you with following the inverse square law phenomena. But the problem with that is the behavior of the wave inside the interface that is two dimensional is a little bit different than the behavior of regular waves in the free space, which is the inverse square law directly applied to. Now, as far as the surface wave, we have a different kind of surface waves, and then we say that interface could be seen differently from the perspective of physics. And then we see that that bending is actually the behavior of the particular mode of that interface, which would be the waveguide, which would be transverse magnetic or transverse electric, in the given width of that interface. So actually we're not then now dealing with a two-dimensional space, but we're dealing with the space between Earth and something that is up on the Earth, and that could be, let's say, the upper level of the hot air, which would be somewhere in between the Earth and something that is below the clouds. And now we have a ducting. And that ducting is not necessarily the ducting that is described by reflection from the ionosphere, but it's a ducting that is actually a is a reflecting by an angle from whatever is the property of the electric changes, which would be the change of the properties of the air. That means air is uniform only at a certain distance from the ground, but it's not uniform when we talk of going, 200-300 feet up high. So ducting is then created by rapid difference of that part of air that has a different electric contact, different dielectric constant. One more thing that I want to add, and I'm going to finish up, because I believe Dr. Roy doesn't like that to be carried on too long. What is the interface? If you have two dielectrics and you have no conductor at all, but those two dielectrics have different electric constants, and you put one on the other, now you're creating the interface. And that kind of interface is widely used. You have strip lines that are used for it. You have, I was listing to Dr. Roy a number of things that are used for it. Hold on. I'm trying to get to it. Cannot find it right now. But anyhow, it's a number of elements that are using the same phenomena. So you either have a perfectly conductive a material, and you have a dielectric on it, and that's the interface, or you have a perfectly dielectric material and another material that is also perfectly dielectric, but the dielectric constant is different, so they are two different materials, and you're creating the interface. By that, we may see that the ducting, for our ham radio perspective, is being done by air that changes in a certain point its dielectric properties. And that's how the ground wave is spreading around the Earth. But because we're still dealing with inverse square law, that's why the propagation is based on the signal of strength and based on the reflection and refraction. Dr. Roy.
AC2GS. A bunch of things. When you're talking about the ducting, you're really talking about, for the most part, tropospheric ducting. That is not run-of-the-mill. You need a thermal inversion. The weather pattern has to be such that the heat distribution is inverted from its usual form in order to have the dielectric constant of the troposphere acting as a duct for usually UHF and VHF. Usually you hear people on 2 meters where you shouldn't hear them. We'll hear people from Pennsylvania and such. So that's tropospheric ducting, which is one thing. It's not ground wave. It's not on the level of the ionosphere that I mentioned. The troposphere only goes up about 3 miles or so. The ionosphere kicks in at around 6+ miles off the ground, so that's a slightly different thing. And I just want to touch on the fact that you can't pick your mode of electromagnetic energy.
It's wave particle duality, which means it's something like a wave and something like a particle, but neither. So you can't say, well, I'm thinking of it as a particle. Particles can't bend. They can't disrupt their path. If you look at gravitational lensing, that will distort it from a straight line. If you put it through any difference in either optical density for light or dielectric constant, you will see a phase shift at the interface, which to us looks as though it's changed its path. You want to talk semantics? I don't know. But everyone else I know calls it bending of the light or bending of the electromagnetic wave.
Yeah, thank you very much. At the first part, you actually gave me a proper wording, which I'm lacking of because of poor English, talking about the temperature. The second thing is you mentioned gravitational lensing. It has nothing to do with radio waves that we use. Gravitational lensing occurs to the wavelength of light from radio and infrared to visible and ultraviolet, which makes sense since they are a part of the spectrum of electromagnetic radiation. But the thing is that they appear at very high frequencies that we don't use. And to explain.
Well, I mean, we're just looking at it because we're looking at distant objects, and we're looking at the visible light or the ultraviolet or the infrared or maybe X-ray. But for all intents and purposes, the entire electromagnetic spectrum undergoes gravitational lensing. It's just the nature of space-time. When an object thinks it's going in a straight line and some large gravitational warp is curving space-time, it will curve along those lines of space-time. It follows the arrows of the warped space-time. So it happens for everything from a fraction of a hertz to the most energetic gamma rays available to our knowledge. They all gravitationally lens.
Comment on ground waves?
Yes, John.
To get back to ground wave, the idea is, I mean, I could give it, like, take an example. I live not too far from WHLI transmitter site there by Exit 20 on Southern State. Now, I've heard WHLI out at Montauk. That's about 100 miles from here. That's below the horizon. So that wave could not have propagated. If it went line of sight, their antenna is not visible from Montauk. It would be below the horizon. But yet I've heard WHLI booming in at Montauk with no problem during the day. So that had to be ground wave propagation. Go ahead.
Well, John, I agree with you. I think there's a fundamental difference between us and Wesley's wish to see this phenomenon. He's very deep into the concept of surface wave propagation, in which waves propagate solely in a two-dimensional interface instead of a three, and so the inverse square law is out, and all kinds of interesting things occur. And I think you and I agree that such surface wave phenomena is possible. It's an imperfect type of situation, and it eventually breaks down and collapses in and of itself, whereas Wesley thinks it's a much more viable and capable of use in the technologies that are rolling out as time goes by.
Could that be skipped?
Well, first, coming back to the ground wave. The ground wave propagation is a type of radio propagation which is also known as surface wave. So if we talk about the distinction between the ground wave and the surface wave, there is a very little or none. These waves propagate over the Earth's surface, not in the ionosphere or the troposphere. They propagate over the Earth's surface in the low and medium frequencies. Now, as far as inverse square law, I'm not saying that waves that are traveling in the interface are free from the inverse square law. No, they are not. It is just that the inverse square law acts a little differently on those waves. That's what I'm telling. And also, it's not a belief. It's a physics that I'm following in this area, and I was trying to get into it just to prove to Dr. Roy that. But I respect his opinion. I actually want him to be from the other side, because he can correct all of those things that I'm wrong with. Let me just. So, if we're talking about interface, it's two-dimensional, but if we're talking about the ground wave, we're talking not about the two-dimensional, we're talking about a difference in grading. That means it's like we say that at the level of Earth, air that is sticking into the Earth has a certain dielectric contact, constant, but 100 feet higher up depends from the weather, depends from, or 200, 300 feet higher up, depends from the elevation of the cloud. The dielectric contact, dielectric constant of the air is different. Now that part is treated as a separate different dielectric. Although it's air by itself, but it's different. Now you have a duct between that part that is high up, but is not that far high, and the air as a lossy conductor. Enter a ship.
Okay, Wesley, let me just see if I have it. Okay, Wesley. The problem is, again, semantics. Tropospheric ducting is not really, I don't think anyone would consider it either ionospheric propagation, certainly, or ground wave. It's kind of a subset of just a generic sky wave propagation. So there's something going locally between the interface of the ground and locally, and that's ground wave propagation, which I think tends to be a little bit on the messy side. I think you think that it can be tamed sufficiently to revolutionize things, but I tend not to feel that way. But, you know, the trouble is getting tropospheric ducting into this picture. I think that's a separate entity all by itself.
Thank you very much. And the last thing is there was a controversy over the TEM mode. And yes, the transverse electromagnetic wave cannot be propagated in the waveguide, but it's included for the completeness. That means when I was trying to explain the TEM mode, the TE mode as the modes existing, there are many other modes existing in the waveguard, I was trying to say that TEM is the something that is delivered. So it is not that T or TM mode is rapidly appearing from nowhere. It is TEM mode that is delivering possibility to create T or TEM in the interface, so it's like a pre-entry form of the wave. And to exit.
Okay, I just want to also point out, David kind of threw out, if any of us were talking about skip. Skip would sort of be due to ionospheric propagation where you don't get heard in a certain range of distance, and then due to the refraction of the radio wave coming off the ionosphere or tropospheric ducting, you get a idiosyncratic reception far away from where you usually. So this is not anything to do with skip. Ground or local is ground propagation is not considered skip.
VDH with a comment. Yes. Yeah. I just wanted to comment on the skip. Yeah. That example I was given for WHLI at Montauk. Yeah. That's too close for skip. 100 miles at medium frequency AM is too close for skip during the daytime. So it was definitely not line of sight. So as I said, that had to be a ground wave of reception. Go ahead.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I have a problem with concepts that start off as, idiosyncratic type of things that come and go are fine in my way of looking upon it. But with surface waves and the Earth in general, I don't think it's sustainable. You need to have a perfect storm. It's sort of like, and I'll jump completely into a different field of quantum mechanics, of entanglement. It is possible, it has been proven, some people don't believe it, that you can entangle fundamental particles to interact at a distance with each other. But the trouble is that it's not a perfect thing. They very constantly will disentangle spontaneously. And so I don't feel as though surface wave phenomena is something that you could use on a worldwide basis. It's useful for lab experiments. It's useful for small range experiments, maybe. But as you expand them, the flaws and problems of maintaining them cause the whole thing to collapse out from under you. But that's just my sensibility on it.
What do you think, Dr. Roy, this answers to the ham radio operation that surface waves can handle?
KG2R1.
Yeah, Wes, you doubled with David. What did you have to say, David?
I don't think that 100 miles of skip at night on AM is impossible, KG2RY.
This was during the daytime, because HLI goes off the air at night.
QSL, well, I didn't get all the details. I guess perhaps you're right. But, at nighttime, there's tons of skip on AM.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hear quite a few Mexican stations coming in in the evening.
QSL.
What I was asking Dr. Roy is, what does he think is the distance for the surface waves on ham radio band, from 3 to 30 megahertz to be allowing us to have a conversation with 1,000 miles, 2,000 miles, depends from the time? Because you said that you don't believe, you believe that surface wave is good to pull up, not for the communication at long distance. I remember that I was talking with Europe using surface wave on 3.5 megahertz.
And how did you know that it was surface wave phenomena?
That's a good question. I don't. But since we're getting into the ground wave propagation, which is also surface wave, it's another way of naming it, the nature of that propagation in the low and medium frequencies is assigned to those ground waves and its propagation. So by that, I may assume that I was using surface waves. But you're absolutely right. I may not.
Okay, I appreciate you telling me that. That's the problem. The problem is, in order to make conclusions, you have to kind of remove all the variables that you're not particularly interested in that might confuse the issue. I don't know how far the truly pure phenomena like this can persist on the surface of the Earth. I think it's a mess of a bunch of different aspects in addition to surface waves. I would be sort of amazed if any kind of consistent surface wave phenomena could persist beyond 10 miles or so. But I'm just pulling a number out of my hat. It's just that these things, where pure surface wave phenomena has really been tested, it's been short range for the most part that I'm aware of, and it's capable of getting screwed up by kind of almost anything.
So it's not a sturdy, persistent, consistent, you know, you couldn't sell it commercially right now because you'd need someone to kind of twiddle with it all the time. So I don't think these things would go 1,000 miles personally by far, but I can't give you the exact distance because it's not that it probably goes X number of feet and then fails. It probably just continues to fail worse and worse as the distance goes farther and farther. And some failure rates are acceptable and some are not.
Don't you think that depends from the weather, that means the delicate properties of the air? That means if we see something significant as a layer in the air, based on the temperature or humidity or whatever we take for it, that width in vertical pattern between the air as a lossy conducting medium and that something significant that is horizontal to the earth and is up high, that would allow to given frequency at low frequency range, at a low frequency to have a range far or very short. Don't you think that this is what is causing it?
Well, to take the opportunity of simplifying the question, I think there are way too many ways for it to go bad. So the weather affects it, local conductivity affects it, geography affects it, geology affects it, weather affects it, almost everything affects it. And that's why it's probably not going to be consistently capable of giving you a calculatable failure rate. It's one day it might work, the next day it won't work at all. So in a short form, yeah, I sort of agree with what you said there, but I think it's one of the problems, not one of the solutions.
Thank you very much. No more questions.
Okay, very good. Anyone else with any questions tonight? We got a little time to go before Paul's space report, so if you have any questions of a technical nature, please give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, nothing heard. I will bring up a subject. I was asked earlier today if I would make some comments about the COVID-19 situation, the vaccines that are available right now, and the new variant that has been discovered in the United Kingdom and South Africa, and unfortunately, as medical personnel have tested more and more places, they found that the UK variant pops up all over the place, which is not unusual. This variant was identified as early as September. So from September all the way to now January, it had 3 months to spread through Europe and into the United States. So the question was whether or not the vaccines will protect us from the variant. There is no definitive answer. The UK doctors who have had 3 months to play around with the variant suggest that according to their findings, it has no effect. It doesn't diminish the immune status of vaccinated people. So the vaccine should hold for this variant as well. But they will continue to do their tests. And now that the doctors in the United States are aware of the variant, they will be running their own tests along those lines. But so far, the news seems to be optimistic that the vaccines will, in fact, protect us from the variant. In the United Kingdom, they're doing a slightly strange thing. They sort of decided, instead of the protocols for the vaccines require a booster. Pfizer requires a booster, I think, 28 days, and Moderna, 21 days. And you're theoretically supposed to use their booster because that's where they tested for the efficacy and safety. But the United Kingdom apparently has lifted that requirement locally in their country so that if someone gets a Moderna first shot, they can get a Pfizer booster. It'll be interesting to see what that does. Probably it's not a good idea, but we'll see.